The upcoming election, of course, will in part be a referendum on U.S. foreign policy under the Bush administration. But scholars and other experts are already at work trying to measure the president's imprint on foreign affairs against the backdrop of history. Melvin Loeffler, professor of American history at the University of Virginia, this year a fellow at the U.S. Institute for Peace, and holds the Kissinger Chair at the Library of Congress, joins us. Thanks very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And Jonathan Clark, a former British diplomat, is foreign affairs scholar at the Cato Institute. He's co-author of America Alone, The Neoconservatives and the Global Order. Mr. Clark, thank you for being with us.
Nice to be here.
And let me ask you, Professor Loeffler, recognizing that the events of September 11th obviously had an effect on the world, how has U.S. foreign policy and your judgment changed over the past 3.5 years?
Yes, I think there is a great temptation to think that the Bush administration has drastically transformed American foreign policy. I actually think there are more continuities than most people think there is. The goals that President Bush often emphasizes, free peoples, free nations, free markets, these are the most traditional goals that have existed in all of American foreign policy from the time of independence and the plan of treaties of 1776 through the open door notes, through Wilson's 14 points, through the rhetoric of Truman and Kennedy and Reagan during the Cold War. I also think the emphasis on unilateralism, the emphasis on preemptive or more explicitly preventative war, the quest for military hegemony, these are not new tactics in the history of American foreign policy.
Mr. Clark.
Well, I think it has changed rather decisively. And what you have seen here is a situation where immediately after 9/11, there was a true bonding between the United States and the rest of the world. You now see something very different. And I think this is going to be something which, looking back, people are going to regret. If you look at the immediate post-World War II period, what you saw then was a period of astonishing creativity by the United States in creating multilateral institutions, the United Nations, NATO, the IMF, the World Bank, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So during the Cold War, and I think that in fact was the decisive struggle of that period, a major struggle, was it a struggle for the ages. The United States enjoyed, I think, rock-solid support throughout Western Europe, inside even China, in East Asia, for its policies. So I think that is the example. That is the successful paradigm which the United States itself created.
You've suggested the U.S. foreign policy in recent years has been too much military policy, not enough diplomatic policy.
That's correct. I think that is really, in a sense, the major break since 9/11. Really, during the Cold War, the United States set up these international, multinational institutions with the very purpose of trying to make war, the resort to force, the very last option of policy. Go back to the Reagan administration. Reagan is the person, in fact, who negotiated with the Soviet leadership very, very intensively. This was a person who, in fact, used the full range of instruments available to American foreign policy.
Let me ask you about how you see U.S. foreign policy moving over the next few months as this campaign proceeds, and for that matter, if there might be some unanimity for any U.S. administration that takes office next year, if it's a continuation of this one or if there is a President Kerry. You have hundreds of thousands of U.S. troops in Iraq. How do you see that commitment developing over the next few months?
Well, I'm afraid I'm going to sound completely defeatist here. If you look at the British in India, the French in Algeria, once a population, and I think we have reached that point now in Iraq, once a host population decides that you are no longer welcome there, then it's really only a matter of time before you have to get out. And that it's only a matter of time now before that realization percolates up the decision-making process in the American government. And that come sometime next year, the voices calling for a very substantial drawdown, if not total withdrawal, will be in the ascendant.
The question, however, is how best to disengage and who is best able to do it and in what circumstances. Looking to the international community as a framework for the disengagement process, re-engaging the United Nations in a serious and constructive way will be a vital mechanism for withdrawing from Iraq and re-engaging the world in a constructive way.
I want to end by asking you about Sudan. Is this an example of the limits of the United Nations to intervene and undertake some action in a situation, or is it at the same time an example of ways in which the United States has been hampered in its ability to put together an international coalition in the United Nations to get something accomplished?
I think that the United States has taken some initiatives, and the Bush administration should be praised for them, but its capacity to do all that is necessary to lead the United Nations in a venture to prevent genocide has been very much undercut by its previous unilateral actions in Iraq, and I think that's most unfortunate.
Mr. Clark.
I think Professor Leffler is absolutely right that the prospects of sending a large expeditionary force to Sudan are minimal, and we shouldn't really talk about it as though this was a real prospect. And the complexities on the ground there between the religions, between nomadic and settled tribes, are so great that if any force arrived there, they would find at least as difficult a situation as they're encountering today in Iraq.
Gentlemen, thank you both very much. Jonathan Clark, former British diplomat and foreign affairs scholar at the Cato Institute and co-author of the book America Alone, The Neoconservatives and the Global Order. Thanks very much.
Pleasure to be here.
And Melvin Leffler, professor of history at the University of Virginia. This year he's a fellow at the U.S. Institute for Peace and holds the Kissinger Chair at the Library of Congress.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Scott.